Brisbane, Australia. This is episode 121 of The Normal Blokes, a podcast dedicated to improving the competitive 40k experience. I'm Denise, and today we are joined by Uprising 2023 champion for the second year in a row, Dr. Liam Hackett. How you doing, mate?
Good. Good morning, everyone.
Just love a bit of suspense in the morning. We're also joined by a brand new addition to the team who's actually been on the show before. But we'd like to take this time to give Nathan Bleakley a very warm welcome as a new podcast host for 2023. Welcome, mate.
Thanks, Denise. It's lovely to be here, and I'm very excited to now come on as a regular host.
Yeah, so for everyone listening, you know, firstly, thank you for your support over the years, and you know, we've been doing this for a while. I was talking to Luke over the weekend, and we're nearly at 5 years of making episodes, which is terrifying. But we found out last year that you know, we were all getting quite busy, so it was getting harder to record episodes and put them out with at a good enough quality and a high enough quality that we'd be happy with. And I think this year we're going to do a few more things to make sure that we get more regular content out and still maintain a really high quality of product that we'd like to give. So one of the things we're going to do is you know, add more members to our team. And the first addition is Nathan. So it's really great to have Nathan on board. We've been playing with Nathan for, what, like 4 or 5 years now. And he's come down to Adelaide 3 times. And, you know, we love his company. But also his insight in the game and his, you know, playing skill is really, really bumped up. I don't think I've been able to snag a win against Nathy for a little while now. So, mate, it's great to have you on, and we'll have some chicken tenders together on the podcast. It'll be lovely.
Well, it's good now I finally have an outlet to talk crap about 40k that isn't bothering all my mates in the chats.
Yeah, I'm sure your workmates are just sick of
that. Now you've got a whole new chat to bother.
Yeah.
they can't chat back either, so perfect.
Yeah, no, I don't know if you guys at home have this issue, but like I have like 15 active 40k chats and it's paralyzing.
Not only do you have so many chats, but then all the chats are for different things. So every now and then you'll go into a chat and they'll be like, I think we should select this person for a team. And you're like, wait a minute. This is the chat where everyone wants to be in that other chat. Oh no, I've made a horrible mistake.
How good. Well, Liam's probably got the most because you have actual responsibilities. But look, I think, you know, on this episode, for everyone listening, we'll be discussing our time at Uprising down in Adelaide this year for the third campaign that we've gone on. Firstly, a big thank you to the TOs, Adam Napier, Josh Engelke, and Simon Vickers. You guys always put on a stellar event. We, a few of us were there on Friday for the setup, and the amount of stuff that you guys just have to organize and prepare, like even before and after the event, is crazy. Especially this year for a 200 plus player event. You're always really warm and receptive, and we really appreciate, you know, you guys running the event, the biggest competitive event of the year. But I guess we'll talk a bit about our factions. We'll talk a bit about Liam's run and how he did. We'll also talk a bit about the predictions from Arcs of Omen. This is probably the biggest, you know, and first of the events that played that pack, for better or for worse. But I think it's a great opportunity to look at the changes. And, you know, there were some interesting trends we found with some factions that, you know, we thought were going to be really prevalent and strong and didn't do well. And other factions that we, you know, almost discounted that performed admirably with a few great players at the helm. But I guess we'd like to start. Liam, I know before the event, you sent me about 10 lists. And the list you actually submitted, the list you actually submitted, I vetoed quite hard. I was like, no, Liam, you're going to run into GSC and you won't be able to do anything. But tell me a bit of a tale about how you came upon the Solar Pulse, Solar Watch list. That's not actually good, it's just fast.
It's not actually good, it's just fast. And the real reality of the Solar Watch list is that it's a case study in how lazy someone can actually be, because I was playing the exact same list back in April, or whatever it was before the Custodian nerf. Now, GW decided that they want to bully me, and so they nerfed it pretty hard way back when, you know, taking OBSEC away from things and nerfing bodyguard and making all the stratagems once per game only. And I had 20 wardens and everything painted, ready to rumble. And then they went back on my shelf. 2 weeks pre-Uprising, we're playing the Arcs of Omen pack, and all those nerfs get rolled back. And I break open the cabinet, I brush the dust off my models, my pro-painted models, if you know what I mean. And
Wash models.
look, pro-washed, pro-Bunnings. And once they'd been dusted off, I decided, hey, look, let's put these on the table and try them. And quite literally, the decision point, and the only real decision point for me, was that the terrain at this event was a little bit lighter than what I'm used to, just from a staging perspective. And the custody list has what feels like literally no models. So I'm able to hide it in small ruins. And that was kind of just the decision point. Like that's the long and short of why I decided to go, because my logic was, I don't mind if I lose, provided I don't lose turn one. That was kind of my entire logic. And that's why I ended up playing Soul Watch.
Yeah, can you run through? I know a lot of people listening may have seen the list already. It essentially was two big warden bricks of what, 10 wardens each. But can you run through the rest of the list with the tech you had?
Yeah, so I mean, j jokes aside, I wouldn't be playing the army if I didn't think that it could actually go all the way. It was one of the few armies I thought were available to me that could actually do it. The army is obviously a single Arcs of Omen detachment. It's Solar Watch, which is the custody shield host that grants plus one advance and charge alongside fallback and charge. So it's basically Harlequins wearing big golden armor. And the list was Trajan, the big boss, a biker guy with nothing, 20 wardens and two big blobs of 10, five Alaris custodians, which are the Terminator ones, a single squad of three of those and two singles, an Alaris Terminator banner, who had the neg one to hit banner, five Flamer Sisters, a Leia, who's the sister's character, and a Sisters of Silence Rhino. Even though I can meme a little bit here, I do actually think the list is quite strong. It's got a lot of really, really cool tech in it. Solar Watch forgoes the four up mortal wound save that most of the custodian players, I think, rely probably too heavily on in favor of having a warlord trait that grants you advance and charge. So I think one of custody's biggest weaknesses, let's say their two biggest weaknesses, are mobility for the infantry and mortal wounds. So I kind of forego the mortal wound protection in favor of the mobility, which allows me to play into a more shooting meta. It also has like three different mechanisms to stop fallback. So it's the sort of army that, if piloted with way too much coffee in your system, that you can tri-point and Tanglefoot and use the Marshall Katars to stop fallback. And so all of my games were basically me desperately praying that I was able to wrap a single guardsman or I would die. And clearly it worked.
Yeah, I remember after one of your rounds, Liam, you came up to me and told me that you were now a Captaris sexual. Can you just expand on what Captaris did for the list for people who are listening and might not have a clue? Because
Yeah,
I
and
didn't until you told me.
yeah, look, that's fair. You have correctly identified the way I am orientated these days. I'm very Captaris leaning. So it's one of the karate stances. From here on out, just like a general rule, I'm not going to say martial katas, which is the name of the rule that the custodies get. I'm going to call them karate stances because it's funnier and also easier to say. So one of the karate stances is called Captaris, and one of its stances is if you're in combat with an infantry custody who's doing this karate pose at peak male performance, you have to roll off to fall back from me. Vehicles and monsters are exempt, but and you get plus one if you have fly, but it can lock essentially anything else in combat. And this is really potent because obviously, even things like, for example, crisis suits, Tau commanders, Votan bikes, all of them can be locked in combat with Captaris. And one of the really big points about having the big 10-man custodian warden units is that you can tag three, four, even once I tagged five different units. And then they all have to roll off to fall back individually. So your chances obviously become like exponentially higher at successfully locking someone in combat. And it's amazing. It's incredible. And the biggest thing GW did for custodies was not the defensive strats being rolled back to whenever you want. It's actually the stratagem martial discretion, which allows you to go into whatever Qatar you want, whenever you want, essentially. So, you know, you're able to keep a custodian water unit that falls back and charges in that Captaris doctrine, if for want of a better term, all game. You can just do it all the time and keep locking people in combat, which was absolutely incredible. I think I spent 4, maybe even 6 CP on that in most of my games.
That's insane. That's properly insane. And definitely something that people wouldn't have expected from like a basic custodes list with, you know, quote unquote normal units rather than these big bricks. So that's super exciting. And I think we'll get to some of the games that Liam played, and especially towards the top end, we'll talk about that. But Nathan, thank you for your patience. You've been awfully silent. You brought a really interesting list that we were talking about before the event. And, you know, you definitely adorned the canvas on this one. But could you tell us a bit about your Emperor's Children list?
Sure. Well, traditionally, I'd say like a lot of the season I'd had success with Necrons, but I felt that sort of as more and more sort of codexes were coming out, more and more people were figuring them out, especially with aggressive shooting and melee playstyles. So our good friend Ben Warrior was moving on from his Chaos Space Marines in about October, and I always had a fond love of Black Legion, but had a true disdain of the idea of painting them. Thankfully, Ben had done a lot of the work for me in that regard, so moved on to them, tried about 3 or 4 different sub-factions, and as the Arcs changes came out, the Emperor's Children secondary improved, Adorn the Canvas Eclectic, as well as just some of the usual Chaos Space Marine builds like Abaddon or the Terminators. They probably went up a little bit in points, and the removal of Armor of Contempt sort of pushed me towards a build I'd tried initially, but I don't think I was familiar enough with the faction to get to grips with. So ended up taking a single Arcs of Omen detachment of Emperor's Children. The list is basically just a Demon Prince with Flames of Spite and Mantle Traitors, which gives about 7 different respective buffs, but mainly hits hard in melee, can use the Fight Last strat for free, and he hands out a reroll hits to a Noise Marine squad. A mop with 3 casts and 24-inch range. 24-inch range on those powers was pretty crucial to avoid being denied and also giving me buffs throughout the board. Lucius the Eternal, who was just really good at being able to hold a spot and mage sure no one really ever charged there without fighting last. 6 new units of Noise Marines with Blastmasters, who are amazing. Just great shooting, great combat, great obsec. Unit of 10 Possessed, which, given Emperor's Children, gives every non-mark unit the Slaanesh keyword, meant I could give them Delightful Agonies and +1 toughness with the -1 to wound Black Rune, which meant they were kind of the meat of the meat and potatoes of my list. 2 Decimators, which were the Forge World Dreadnought looking unit that just shoots mortal wounds. And then little Venom Crawler, and then my 2 little MVPs, the 2 individual 25 point spawns. Had a bunch of great games. Was really excited to play some of the people, especially at the pointy end, but ended up finishing 6-2, so I'm really happy with my performance, especially after Arcs of Omen dropped the Armor of Contempt.
Yeah, man, and you know, from the practice game we played, those possessed, unless you really put something massive into them, they just don't move. And if you kill one or two, cool, you just bring one back for extra distance. That's amazing.
Yeah, like I think it's really like that gives it the melee component to the list, and the Emperor's Children sort of fight control of being able to fight on death. Proc fight last from the characters, all the Noise Marine units having fight first, everything being able to heroically intervene. Like, there's a lot of versatility with it, but it is also puts a lot of shooting pressure on Betfair against the 3 Emperor's Chosen Custodes players. Oh, I played at which point I wanted to hand you back your Decimators to Nathan, melt them down for spare resin, because 3 or 4 mortal wounds into 4 up Feel No Pain versus mortals is a bit of a grim time for 360 points of your army.
Yeah, that's horrific. That's fair. That's very fair. It's yeah, I think Nathan, your run was pretty good. You had a really good final game with Big Dog Josh McMillan, which we'll talk about a bit later. But yeah, I think we'll dive into the I guess the spread of factions in a moment. But I'll really quickly talk about my stuff.
Talk about
I took Tau. Yeah, I took Tau. with the changes on the Bombers, of course, the Bombers were now well and truly in the bin, like at the bottom of the bin. So I had to find something else to fill the list. And I ended up just taking a Tausep double Riptide long strike list, a Breacher boat, a Pathfinder boat. The Pathfinders went so hard. I finally learned how to use them and not just have them die instantly, which was great. Some Kroot and a little crisis unit to do, you know, have a bit of mobility. But I lent into a couple of Cold Star commanders, and I was actually really happy with some of the choices I made with them after the games. But one of the commanders was your classic full rerolling with the punchy flamer. But I gave him three airburst guns, and which were the indirect guns. And then the second commander also had three indirect guns, but he had a prototype weapon, the Dominator frag, which as long as he hits a target, it puts them at -4 leadership. So the cool thing about this is I found that, especially like in one of the games we played, Nathan, Riptides were great, but they would sometimes just underkill units or just do a little bit less than what I expected. So they were rounds, and you know, with the Armor of Contempt change, with that being gone, Tau Indirect becomes a little bit stronger because it can actually threaten like marine bodies without storm shields and things like that. So I found it was a pretty cool tool to, you know, if I've crippled a unit, force leadership somewhere, if they've taken something like Oath of the Moment, and it came up in two of my games, that it would just force them to lose oath points. But also just like if there's one person left and they've already used their auto pass morale, like they've just got to roll a one to lose that or to not lose that model. And in a few games where I was playing Horde matchups, I'll have my full reroll commander blow away, you know, a big unit of something. And then my second commander with the leadership cripple another, and there'd be morale issues on both. So I found that was really, really useful, really interesting. Really happy with that pick, but ended up going 5-3. Had a good event. I think the last couple of Adelaides, I did a similar thing, so I was happy to achieve a similar result, which with what I thought was a much harder field. So yeah, still quite pleased.
I think that Denise, that Dominator frag is actually really awesome tech, because I mean, I versed it, spoiler alert, a little bit later on, and the idea that a custodian can run on like a 2 if you've lost a couple of them is actually pretty impressive. I mean, -4 leadership is better than what Chaos Demons can do to their opponents.
I made some funny things run. Like I made a Tyrant Guard out of Synapse run. I made Vanguard Vets run. I made a Sandguard run. Like there was just weird stuff that was running away. Like I made Howling Banshees run. It's funny.
I mean, at the airport, I think you and I got a little bit excited because we were looking at it and we were like, with -4 leadership, you can make the Silent King run away. But it turns out I'm actually just a bad Necron player, and I do not know that the King is immune to morale checks, as in like the Menhirs don't count at all.
Yes.
I got a bit excited there. That was
that
funny.
Would have been very funny.
I think a few people got in a rabbit hole about a sisters player with Celestine. Like, oh, if we shoot the Dominator frag at it, we'll be able to make her run if we kill the girls. And I'm just sitting there like, I'm pretty sure everyone has the ignore morale rule for their little offsiders.
Yeah.
I think that the ignore cover in your basically your whole army as well, as you said, really plays into that Armor of Contempt removal and makes those airbursts like pretty terrifying.
Yeah, and look, I'll give credit where credit's due. Before the event, I was talking a fair bit with Jono Bishop and a little bit with Ducky on you know, tech choices to have, and Ducky was pretty much like, always take target locks for ignore cover. and Jono was nice because he was giving me a bit of the insight, because he lives in South Australia, of the potential terrain. He's like, yeah, bro, you definitely need target locks. There's still people going to be touching cover and stuff like that. So, yeah, so I was really happy with some of those choices. Had a great time fighting two of the, four or five GSC players, and that was rough, but, you know, all great opponents, and thank you to everyone that gave me a great game. But I guess we'll talk a bit more about our trip now. So whenever we, and we did this last time, a few of us, we went down to Uprising a few days early and had a bit of non-40k related fun. But this time we had, 15 of us, was it, guys, that went down with us?
Yeah, it was a big group of 15 over two Airbnbs that were like next to each other.
Yeah, and we put up a little video of, you know, our time, but most of our time was spent around the big Airbnb with the pool and a nice backyard. But we all arrived on Thursday, and the event starts on Saturday for reference, so we had 2 days, and we definitely had a little bit of a party at the big Airbnb. We may or may not have gotten a noise complaint. We may or may not have consumed a lot of alcohol. But it was so much fun. It was great to have everyone down there, and like for a lot of us, I felt it was a bit of a break from reality to head down to Adelaide and play 40K, but also just hang out with the friends.
I think it's worth touching base with Hi Carl Ollie and his staff of Retribution. For anyone listening, Oliver Johnson of the Northside Alliance created a staff out of vodka mixers that was officially, in imperial measurements, one Eric tall. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah, that man can put away a Mercury cider. So, yeah, it was good.
I don't know if the next day the hangover was as bad or the sunburn, because like half of us just somehow forgot that sunscreen existed. We were that excited when we arrived, and I think we all paid the price
Oh man,
throughout the weekend.
I never burn, and my back and chest was just red. Like it was,
The Adelaide sun's like pretty deceptive. Like it was like a pretty cold day, but I'm pretty sure like we were there just like as it was like threading the needle through the gap in the ozone layer at us.
Yeah, it literally just scoped us up, being like, ah, Queenslanders, boom, and just burnt us.
We all got dominator fragged by the sun.
Oh yeah, so we had a big little big send on Thursday, and Alex Towse from NZ from 40K Frontiers came and joined us and hung out for a bit. So it was Alex, was lovely to meet you if you're listening. And yeah, the next day, most of the crew were just mo sitting around at home nursing the hangover, but there was a group of us that decided to be very brave and head out to the Barossa to do some wine tasting. It was lovely out there. Went to a winery. We finished after our first tasting because we were too hungover to continue. So the thought of having any more wine for me personally would be very painful. I don't know how you felt, Nathan.
No, I was ready to call it. Thankfully, the steak just like revitalized me completely afterwards.
Oh yeah. Big shout out to Char Restaurant in the Barossa. Oh my goodness. Can make a mean steak for $50. So that was lovely. That was lovely. We then, the five of us that went down to the winery went via the venue, set up some tables, said hi to everyone. Got back home, and one thing we did last year was a bunch of us, the three of us included, booked a nice like a fine dining dinner for the night before the event, because we found that, something we always do is at these 40K events just fill up on stuff like McDonald's and KFC. So we were like, fuck it, we're gonna sit down, have a nice dinner, hang out with the guys. And that's something that a lot more people were receptive to this time. So most of our crew, like the full 14, 15, went out to a lovely restaurant. We had a great time. Liam had some, what were they? Purple yeet drinks or purple yeet juices?
Yes. I think a lot of people talk a lot about how Adelaide has an incredible wine culture in the Barossa Valley, but I think the real pinnacle of what Adelaide distilling can do is create the beer referred to as the purple yeet juice. It's actually a product you can buy, and I believe we had about 10 purple yeet juices between a few of us, which was probably a mistake. It's literally just lemonade with beer in it.
Yeah, it tastes
It
fucking horrific, didn't it?
was bad. It was bad. I'm sorry to the company that manufactures purple yeet juice. I will not be endorsing your product.
Yes, that was a lot of fun. There was a point at that night where, we were like, oh, should we go out? And then the responsible decision was made, and we all went home at like a reasonable hour. So we're all in bed by like 11:30, 12-ish. And then, then the tournament started. So even before we, started rolling dice, we'd had like a sick little trip. So that was awesome. I don't know how you guys found it, but I thought it was really, really nice.
What do you think, Nathan?
Yeah, it was absolutely lovely. Like, I think coming down earlier, I think, lets you get acclimatized. I think my first Adelaide, I got down there at like at Friday 10 p.m. Then you feel a bit like a FIFO worker, where you're just like flying in, playing 40K, going home. Whereas this like did feel like, you'd have a bit of a holiday, and it was really nice.
I'm a huge advocate for going down early, right? Because it's not just like hanging out with your mates. It's just sort of like it makes the weekend feel like you're there for more than just playing 40K. It makes you feel like you're having a big holiday with your friends. Like I find doing that makes a 40K tournament like the ultimate boys weekend in some ways. Like it's really cool.
Well, it's like I know for a while, Liam, we got used to doing a bunch of the interstate trips like really quickly, like fly out straight from work Friday and then run straight to the airport after the event. And it literally felt like work. It's like we're going for a work trip. So
Yeah,
this was
it's
nice to
way
exactly
less
like,
fun.
yeah, And this was nice, like you said, to space it out. Like all of us, same thing. We decided to all get later flights on the Monday night as well to just like relax and take our time. And yeah, we got back to Brisbane a bit later, but I think it was good to, you know, slow down a little bit there. But moving on to the actual tournament. So Geordie and Luke on the last episode discussed what they would expect it at things like Uprising Adelaide with, you know, the Arx Furman changes and the rumours. Look, the spread of factions were pretty much where we expected. You know, about 20, between 20 and 25% Marines, and we'll get to that. But otherwise, it was pretty diverse indeed. Like, in the top six pods, Nathan, you were saying there was 14 different factions. So, you know, pretty diverse in terms of who attended, but also who did quite well. Nath, do you want to touch on the elegant little terrain change they did on day two, because I know a lot of people found that the terrain was impacting their games a fair bit.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit nuanced, because I think we were used the first 2 years to like considering Adelaide a very dense event, and in terms of number of terrain pieces and the quality of the terrain pieces, it's always been very consistent. The guys do an excellent job each year in doing the big push for the terrain. I think when we got on the tables this year, especially as I think some people weren't rotating their terrain to suit the mission. There was, I think, a base ruin, at least one or two base ruins on every table. So effectively you touch the footprint of the ruin, and although you gain light cover, you gain line of sight, which I think we've all found as you sort of have the meta's sort of gotten increasingly more killy in shooting. I think light cover is not a very big deal compared to being able to be seen by all the big guns, especially when Knights and Guard and Votan and everything were in the meta. So I think in the first day, people were finding that they'd have at least like 2 to 3 objectives completely in the open. And I think that affected some people's games. But the guys made a very elegant change, completely off their own volition, top of day two, which was to remove the base ruins and replace them with non-base ruins, which again like gives the line of sight covering, which I found just even like transitioning from my games on day one to days two and three, I think made a pretty significant difference, because there was a lot of five objective corner deployment missions where you could hold now those objectives from out of line of sight.
Yeah, and it definitely made the importance of being able to dig people out of objectives or have some form of indirect rather than like just shooting them from your deployment zone, because that's what it was in some cases. Like you could sit in your deployment zone, see an objective that your opponent was on with a ruin near it, but it was based, and you could just blow it to bits. And especially Nathan, like you said, like a bunch of those armies like Votan, Tau have many, many ways to ignore cover. So that light cover didn't even matter at that stage. I guess going on to that, there were still some shooting armies that did quite well. If you're a Tau player and your name wasn't Denith, it turned out that you did quite well on those tables, and we saw a lot of Tau in the top pods. Like we saw two in the top pod to begin with, so that's massive. Do you think, guys, it was like the ability for Tau to move and you know, ignore a lot of the cover and get firing angles compared to things like Votan and Guard that made them quite strong?
Boy, that's kind of a tough question, right? I think mobility is king on lighter or denser tables. I don't think it matters, but I actually also think it's player experience, because one of the things that is very rarely talked about outside of Codex Strength is how long people have been playing the Tau book and how consistently people like yourself, Denith, and, you know, Hayden Walduck, how well they know the Tau book. Because even though, for example, some of the Astra Militarum stuff is so incredible, it's so brand new, and I don't think people have had time to fully stress test it. And Votan's perhaps in a similar boat. That army keeps getting nerfed and keeps changing. And so I feel like the Tau gets a leg up because of the mobility, but I also think it gets a leg up because of the secondaries. And finally, I think it gets a leg up because you guys know what you're doing with your codex, which at a big event like this, especially when you get into a pod at the end that's a bit of a shark tank, that player experience component is going to be probably more important than the codex you're actually playing.
That's very fair. Yeah. So like the lean towards mastery is going to carry a lot of people. And we definitely saw that, you know, on the top end. You touched on Votan, and it was so interesting. Like our good friend Ollie plays Votan, and I think he was the the highest scoring Votan player of the tournament. But I was very surprised, like going through like the first 2 days, like the run on the first 2 days, that we didn't catch or didn't see that many Votan players at the top. And look, I mean, it's interesting. It's like an army that was so overhyped and talked about, but also copped so many nerfs so quickly. It kind of felt like they just didn't have the models in the army to last the five turns. What do you guys think?
I think that was definitely one. It suffered from its own sort of leaks and reputation prior. I think we never truly saw it at full power. And I think now, as you said, Denise, like when you see a Votan army across the table, it definitely has the firepower to blow you away, but probably doesn't have a ton of models. And you really, it's now become something, I think, where we thought it was just going to be, you know, someone could point and click and win games with Votan. Now I think it actually needs a pretty skilled pilot, especially because I think fast melee armies are a bit of an issue with it. So I think it's now an army, I think, that has a relatively high skill cap after all these changes.
Yeah, which is quite, you know, quite ironic. But like often it's like, oh, let's hide from the Votan army, let's not let it shoot me, and then let's run at it at some stage and just win. Like even as Tau, that's like the general game plan.
They also don't really have the secondary options to consistently score if people are hiding from them. Mm-hmm. Votan's a weird game where in a couple of the practice games that I've played, if you pick defensive secondaries, you can eke out a small win in a singles event doing very little versus Votan, because they actually need to like kill you and take the board to do actions to actually play the game.
Yeah, that's it. Like they have like, it's an army that literally has no cheap screens, right? Like every unit is quite dear. Even the transports, like the flying transports to use as screens are pretty expensive. And the bikes, you know, you don't really want to use them because they actually do a lot of the output and get to the places you want to be. So yeah, it's in an interesting spot. Like I know things like the Demons game and like the Creations of Bile game is very, very tricky for Votan. But yeah, and Guard, what do you guys think of that? Because I was personally fucking terrified of catching Guard, and I'm quite happy I didn't have to play a Guard player. But did you guys have experience against playing Guard at the event?
I personally didn't play Guard, but I was briefly going to mention, I think our biggest shock when the lists were revealed on Thursday was that Chris Wright wasn't playing Guard.
Yes.
I think we all had our minds blown.
Yeah, it's full on. I mean, Chris with the jump to Space Fools was awesome, and it was good to see him, you know, trying some novel things and surprising the field. But yeah, and there were so few like Guard players in the pack, and I remember we were sitting in the pool drinking beers, and Brian came up to me being like, "Great meta pick, Denise. No Guard." I'm like, "Fuck, the Dominated Frags don't do nothing." But but yeah, it was so surprising. And like, Liam, did you play any Guard players on the way through? I didn't.
Yeah, round two, I played a fellow by the name of Shannon, who played Guard. And it was weird because I've played a couple of practice games into Guard, and they're incredible. The book is so, so, so strong. But I think that amount of practice and how different this Guard Codex is to a previous Guard Codex means that even the veteran Guard players are still learning the intricacies of their book. And I think it's even fair to say on the top end that there's probably nobody who has complete mastery of that codex at this point. And when you're playing those tournament games, as like I said, I think that matters like a lot. The other thing about Guard is that you get so much in a Guard army, like so many units. And if you're Captaris inclined, like I am, the more Guard units, the more attracted I am to that list. And for example, my Guard opponent worked out pretty early on that we played Tide of Conviction. If you actually play the mission at all, you're giving me points to wrap, like ways to just shut down your army's shooting. And yeah, that's pretty much the story of how the game went. So I think Guard's in a bit of a precarious spot, because even though the numbers for that codex look really great, the actual gameplay for it is way more difficult than it appears.
Mm. Yeah, it's so interesting.
It's probably worth mentioning that the guys did allow the full range of Guard models for Uprising Adelaide. So on paper, this was the faction as it was intended, as it was released. But probably you're right, Liam, just like the faction mastery and the experience and maybe even hobby lag just wasn't there for a lot of guys.
Yeah.
And look, on the topic of, you know, those changes from Arcs of Omen and you know, Guard being not having the time in the kiddie pool to really grow and develop into a list, but also players not to have mastery on it yet. Marines getting shaken up so much was like the big talking point for a lot of people. And, you know, I will happily admit when I was wrong. I looked at the Marine changes and I went, yeah, look, it's good. They got all these new things. The secondaries are good. You know, War Gear's free. But in my head, I was like, ah, they still die like Marines. And I wasn't ready to pivot to Marines at the last minute. But boy, were there some Marine lists at the top end. Like Iron Hands, Dark Angels. Dark Angels in the final. You know, the Ultra Marines list doing well. Nathan, you had a game against Ultras, I believe, at the start. And, you know, let's talk a bit about that, Liam.
What do you think? The crazy thing about Marines, I got to admit, was that pre-event, I was pretty 100% convinced that Iron Hands would be everywhere. You'd be like sweeping the floor, Iron Hands. You'd be going to lunch, Iron Hands in your lunch. You'd be going to the toilet, Iron Hands in the toilet. Like, you know, honestly, I was convinced there would be Iron Hands everywhere. And there were a few, but Marines had way more diversity than I expected. It was actually really awesome to see. Dark Angels came out of the woodwork. We had Adam Camilleri, a well-known international player, playing a Dark Angel 100% Ravenwing list. We had Dark Angels in the top pod playing a mix of Deathwing and Ravenwing. Dark Angels throughout the event were very, very common. But then you also had a lot of Blood Angel players. You had Chris Wright playing Space Wolves. You had a whole bunch of different lists scattered throughout the event that I think what I was excited about was that there was not like a Space Marine archetype that was just copy-pasted. I mean, if we rewind a little bit, pre-nerf Space Marines, like let's say none of these balanced data slates exist, Iron Hands was like 90% of the Marine players. If we rewind to CanCon, let's say like 2 years ago, or was it 3 years ago? Apologies for the incorrect date. Yeah, literally I played 6 Iron Hand players in one event. All 6 in a row as well. I mean, by the end, I thought that Ferios was going to haunt my dreams. Like that man was just following me around even while I'm asleep. But like this time, unnerfed Marines had diversity. And I think that was awesome.
Yeah, and it was like, you know what it looked like or felt like? It's almost like people were testing their mental concepts, going, oh, this is cheap, this is, you know, a good secondary, I think this will be good, let's test it on a big field. And that I thought was really, really cool.
I think the big thing as well is, like, I, as you mentioned, Denise, I played one of the Abbeys, lovely bloke James Beale, and I also played Chen Gao, another Adelaidean round 6 who was on Dark Angels. I think the cool thing about Marines now is the diversity of the secondary game. Like, you know, Oath of Vomit rolled back. Now you can sit in the Doctrines all game. Codex Warfare is pretty terrifying versus some of the shooting armies. A lot of the factions have a really good specific secondary. I think McCrag just marched all over me round 1. But then you introduce the unnerf shock tactics and everything as well. They really have the ability to throw up the points in either an aggressive or passive play style, but also just the output now and the number of units is pretty wild when you look at it on the table. And I think seeing Dark Angels do particularly well because they have that sort of diversity of ways to handle problems with either the Deathwing or the Ravenwing. And then the speed of their movement is pretty scary.
Yeah, and it was almost hard to tech for those different things, right? Because, like, on one hand, you've got these cheap Marine bodies that are doing everything. On the other hand, you've got, like, vehicle-based Iron Hands and to some extent, Dark Angels lists as well. Then you've got the biker units. So it's hard to now make that prediction on what you'll see and what to tech against. But yeah, it really blew my mind how successful they were. And also, you know, the number of, like, newer or, you know, less heard of tournament players, for lack of a better term, doing well with the Marines was great to see. Like there was, like even in the final, Liam, you know, Dark Angels in the final and a lot of other players getting up into the top pods was great to see that diversity, not just in the armies, but in the players that are piloting those armies. That was really cool.
Just really quickly on Space Marines, one thing to mention is if you actually look at the win-loss of the different Marine factions, Dark Angels overall, I think, performed the best, actually, which has been a long time since they can say that. I mean, Dark Angels, the top-performing Dark Angel player only lost to myself, and the second top-performing Dark Angel player only lost to myself and Igor playing Nicolac Necrons. And then after that, you have all of the Dark Angel players that went 5-3 or 6-2. So you actually had overall a very, very high performance from your average Dark Angels.
Wow, that's actually pretty obnoxious. that's great. It's the final faction that I guess we needed to talk about are Knights and Chaos Knights. You know, our good friend Will Milton took down Imperial Knights that he's been crushing with. You know, Brent and Tim and Nick Argent took down Chaos Knights. I played a Chaos Knight player over the weekend, and I was terrified of what they could do and turning off my Obsec and things. How do you guys think they fared on the terrain and during the event? Because I definitely saw a bunch up in the higher pods.
Nathan, do you want to take this one away?
I will. Thanks, Liam. I think the range and the diversity of shooting on that army and its speed as well made it really good for those tables because you were able to draw those long firing lanes across the board with or without the terrain change on day two. And I think Knights, you know, they're just so able to win the attrition war because of their ability to have Obsec and also the sort of density of their profile in sort of nullifying a lot of the enemy's anti-infantry combat and shooting. And certainly I think now we've had a year with those books and contrary to the guard point, I think there are a lot of people with mastery on those books and really good knowledge of the matchups. I think they're always a big teams feature, but I think singles now, especially since the change, I think just before their codex with the Obsec and certainly Knight's ability to turn it off from turn four, I think they're a very big threat in singles and really good players can take them to the top, but you need to have an answer for them, I think, whatever you're playing.
Yeah, and one interesting thing, like the Imperial Knights build, of course, the secondary game is pretty set and good. But the Chaos Knights, you know, Chaos Knights sometimes like to take things like grind them down, and the fact that now the Armagers will give you CP when you take that is a nice little free boost. And yeah, dude, the like you said, Nathan, the Obsec Armagers, turning off the Obsec is a big deal. It's a big deal, especially against some armies that like to back end their primary. So look, I mean, I'm no surprise they did really well. I guess what one thing we'll finish off on the episode is I'd like you guys to talk a bit about, I guess, one game you had or a favourite moment during the event. Maybe highlight some players that you play that you hadn't met before, things like that. Might start with you, Nathan.
Yeah, I had some excellent games. Like round 6 and 7 was really good versus Chen Gao and Blake Jones on Dark Angels and Orcs, respectively. Both really sort of close, fun games. And but probably my hard event was getting to play Josh McMillan, the New South Wales circuit champ, as Dell from down under 40K likes to say, the best circuit in Australia. We'll leave the jury out on that. But it was a really lovely game. I was completely burned out and forgot my sidekick the first two turns. And Josh really helped set the tone for the game by, you know, letting me go back on that and sort of despite it being sort of a very high level game with sort of big swings at points, it ended up being a very good sportsmanship game. And I think I was able to return the favor in a couple of moments, but came down to 5 points at the end. I think my run with the CSM was beaten by the fact that Sisters could make their 9-inch charges guaranteed. And he just was able to control my top corner objective in the key moments. And it was a really fun game, and it was cool seeing Josh, despite some sort of early bad dice, like for him and me sort of putting the pressure on hard turns 2 and 3, the way he was sort of able to get himself out of those sticky situations and really enjoyed our game.
Yeah, nice. Josh is definitely a veteran on the Sisters, and you know, he's had a very, very big year, and a bigger one to come in 2023, but look, very briefly, from my end, some honourable mentions. It was lovely to play Pete Hatcliffe again for the third time in a row at Adelaide. Lovely to also play Greg from New South Wales on Yanari, who I played last year, and you know, I was getting a convincing win then, but he's definitely done a lot of improving, and we had a really tight game, and he took the win. But I think my favorite games were probably on the third day in the pods. First one against Harry Powell, one of our Brisbane boys. Really tight game against his BA, and I had to do some silly things at the end to win by a point, which was really good. And, you know, credit to Harry for how well he's been doing on the BAs. Mm-hmm. But my final game against Dylan's Demons was crazy. And as we know, you know, Big Wayno, 121 from 121 mentions on the podcast. He plays Demons, and I haven't been able to crack them with the tower for a little while. But using that experience, I kind of gleaned from playing against Wayne so regularly, was able to sneak the win against the Demons player, which included abandoning my deployment zone and running around the sides and taking his. So great game, great fun with Dylan. Lovely guy from SA, and hope we catch up again for a game next year, mate. But Liam, let's talk about your run. Any exciting points you want to touch on, or you can talk about, you know, I guess the whole last couple of days if you like.
I reckon the two most exciting games that I played at the event was against Oscar Curry, who I've never actually got the privilege to play before. I played him round three, and then Adam Camilleri, who I played in round six. So Oscar was playing Emperor's Chosen Custodes, but unfortunately for me, he also has two Helverins and two Caladius Grav Tanks, basically, instead of just more Custody bodies. And the really funny part about this game is we get to the table and we're having a chat, because we're both playing Custodes. We can basically take an hour to go to the bar and come back, and we still have time to finish the round. I mean, being realistic. So we're chatting and whatnot, and he's got his whole army like on the table, and it's like two stacked boxes, and all the Custodes and the Helverins are in that top box. And I'm like, oh yeah, like this is going to be pretty manageable. And then he takes the top like off the box, and you've got the two Caladius Grav Tanks, because they're enormous, like in their own box. And I'm like, oh right, there's the rest of the art. Like, I'm straight up looking at his list being like, there's almost nothing in his army, this is crazy. Turns out, yeah, I was actually wrong. There were two Caladius in that list as well, which was a little bit grim. We had a really weird game, because, you know, you're playing the Scouring in a Custody mirror, so it's basically a doggy pile in the middle. I was very fortunate to go second, but the funny point of the game was his Trajan Valoris runs in and kills five Custody Wardens in one go, which is very, very rough. And then my Trajan runs into three Shield Guard and kills zero of them, kills literally none of them. And I'm like, wait a minute, hang on a sec, this isn't fair. And so that was pretty funny, to be honest. And no defensive strats, by the way. So that's just a straight dice roll.
That's a big kid argument of, oh yeah, well, my dad did.
Yeah, my dad's bigger than your dad. So that was pretty funny. I ended up obviously getting up in that game, but it's really weird when you're playing a Custodes mirror and you both take Stand Vigil, or Long Vigil, whatever it's called, which is Custody Stranglehold. It's scored end of the battle round, so going second is just a huge deal, like just a really, really big deal for that game. We had a lot of pretty funny points, you know, like his Alaris fighting my Alaris, and all sorts of very, very weird situations, which was overall quite funny. I think the cake point as well in that game was Alaya, the little sister's character, randomly doing 8 wounds to an Armiger. She rolled like 100% wounds in combat and just decided to like chop its legs off and just stand on it. It was pretty weird, but that was cool. And then my other really, really exciting game was round six. So this is, for people who aren't familiar with the format of the event, the end part of the event is podded. So the last day, round seven and round eight, is podded, and you can only move within that pod. So for example, if you're in the top pod, the worst you can come is fourth. And then so on and so forth by multiples of four. So round six is like the decider of like who gets into what pod, especially if you're playing at the top end. And I played Adam Camilleri, who's a veteran 40K player and does a lot of online stuff for 40K, but he's also a veteran Dark Angel player, not just, you know, playing Space Marines. He's been playing Dark Angels for yonks. I mean, he played Dark Angels back in VTC when they were unnerfed. He's been playing Dark Angels for years and years. So he has, even without the changes recently, he has faction mastery on Dark Angels, and it really, really shows. this was an example, Denise and Nathan, of how, like, why I now identify as a Captaris person, because basically I went first in that game, and Adam correctly worked out that I could teleport the Alaris turn one, and then if I went into Captaris turn one, I could potentially tag one, even two of the biker units if I teleported and made my 8-inch charge, which of the reroll is not unlikely enough for you to ignore it. Probably not worth me relying on, but not unlikely enough that you can ignore it. So what he did was he put 5 scouts and 5 infiltrators in the midboard to stop me scouting with the Rhino, getting a layer out and going. Now, what ended up happening was I got a big blob of 10 wardens to advance and charge and hit the infiltrators, but then pile in, consolidate, and wrap the scout unit. And so I tri-pointed them. I tried to tanglefoot them and failed. But then, luckily enough for me, I picked up one of Adam's dice just to be a little bit of a troll. And I ended up rolling a 6 for the Captaris roll. And he rolled like a 1 or a 2. So The scouts couldn't fall back. And so 10 wardens were standing in the middle. We played Data Scry Salvage. So 10 wardens are standing in the middle of the table against 20 Ravenwing bikers, 3 land speeders, and a whole bunch of characters, and none of them can be shot at all, which was absolutely awesome. And from there, I think I had quite a bit of momentum to keep the game in my favor from there. But it was a pretty nail-biting roll, I tell you what.
That's premium. That's great.
And yeah, that's kind of, I reckon, the highlight of like the two games that I think really stood out for me. I had a really awesome game against the normal blokes, Luke Pierce, as well, which I'm sure he'll talk about on the next episode. Mm-hmm. That game was really, really weird. Got a really interesting rules question, which came up in that before that game, and the TOs and Josh Diffie, who I think recently has become a little bit more involved with the Official Games Workshop rules team, also ruled on this issue. And the question was, for Grey Knights, can they use Edict Imperator to shoot a unit of Sisters of Silence? And the ruling from unanimous parties was no. And the precedent being set was that there's already an FAQ saying, for example, if you have Guide from Eldar cast on a unit and they shoot a Kalexus or something, do they get the benefit of Guide? And the answer was no. So there's a precedent for you cannot... essentially, when you're doing any damage to a Sisters of Silence unit, you cannot benefit from psychic powers of any kind, and Edict Imperator is a psychic power. So I understand their ruling, but what it does mean is that for GKs especially, who pay a premium for their models to do mortal wounds and do psychic powers, even just having 2 Sisters of Silence units mean that if I'm at the front of my if they're at the front of my army, they have to skip a turn, basically. And Alea might be 75 points, but she feels like 2,000 points against Grey Knights.
Because, yeah, they can't, I guess, like, they can't edict, punch a hole, and gate in, right?
No.
I guess the big sort of unique point of yours and probably our fellow normal bloke Brian's list that I didn't see in many of the other studies lists was those Sisters of Silence. And it's situations like that, I think, where that, it's not a lot of the list, but that little tech just comes in such a huge benefit.
Yeah, I mean, I took the Sisters primarily just to have something that... I actually took the Sisters primarily to have something to hold objectives that wouldn't trigger the Custody secondary Might of Terror, which is kill more, but Sisters don't count. And then after 3 rounds straight of playing Might of Terror, I think Brian was about to knock my teeth out because it is a very bad secondary, especially when you have units of 1 Alaris. So, look, I probably should have worked that out on my own, but so I stopped taking that secondary. And again, I thought, hey, the Sisters will help me into the psychic matchup. I played 1 game, again, against Luke, where any of my opponents had a single psyker. So overall, the tech, even though the tech didn't, you know, play the matchups that it might be the most favorable in, the one time it did matter, it mattered so much that I would never leave home without at least a layer and 5 Witch Seekers.
Yeah, that's very fair. Very fair. Yeah, well, I guess that really wraps us up for the episode, boys. I'd say, you know, the next episode, Luke is going to record with Hayden and Alex from Ethos and talk a bit about the cool list that they took. You know, a few different perspectives on GSE and Tau. But guys, is there anything else you want to cover before we finish up?
Just wanted to probably say an additional thank you in addition to the TOs, but also Dale Sumner from New South Wales for going on as sort of a fourth honorary TO and making sure we were all hydrated and running around with the photos for the few days. It was good meeting him and good seeing him running around.
Yeah. And yeah, big mention as well to Josh Diffie, who's doing some great things with the Oceanic Championship Circuit and, you know, being there on the day as well. It was good to catch up and see him. And it was, like Nathan said, you know, really good to see everyone again and hang out.
And I guess the last thing I'll say is that I'm looking forward to going over and hopefully bullying some Americans in Atlanta. that's going to be very, very exciting. And I've already started talking with Anthony Vanella. We're hopefully going to be bunking together in Atlanta.
Oh, that's cool. We didn't even mention Liam. Yeah, so Liam winning the event gets what, flights and ticket to the World Championships that G-Dub is running in Atlanta, which is pretty badass. Have you cleared it with them yet? It's the real question.
I have, most regrettably. My wife's blackout period for work is in November as well. So I'm probably going to be doing what we mentioned before. I'm probably going to be doing FIFO 40K, where I fly in for the minimum possible amount of time to Atlanta and leave as soon as humanly possible.
Blackout period is in, is she off work then?
For everyone listening, Em is literally sitting here doing like crying gestures because she can't come to Atlanta. So,
oh no. Well, hey, look, once again, big congrats, Liam. It was sick to see you take it out a second time. Kind of cements Queensland as the most dominant state, doesn't it? It really does.
I think that's a fair statement.
Yeah, look, can't really dispute it now, can you? There's just too much that we've won. But yeah, look, thank you guys for coming on. To our listeners, thank you for following along and your loyalty and support. We will be getting more content out this year and trying to maintain that same high quality. So look forward to that. If you haven't seen the little video we've put out about Uprising, you know, head over to our YouTube channel or our Facebook page. If it entices anyone to travel for big 40K events with their friends, that'd be amazing because it's so much fun. And yeah, if you liked what you heard, give us a like on Facebook, subscribe to us on iTunes. We also have a Patreon to help cover our costs at www.patreon.com/thenormalblokes, which we'll be doing a bit more stuff on that for those who support the podcast as well. The other thing I'd like to mention is in March, organized by Chris from Drop Bear Gaming, we're having an interclub event, and you'll hear a bit more about that on our Facebook page. And it's pretty much the Brisbane clubs getting together and raising some money for WTC team, as well as having a great weekend, you know, playing a little 5-man team event. So, you know, you'll hear a bit about that. But yeah, everyone, stay safe. Call your mother. Take care. See you next time.
See ya.
See you guys.